You would call right when I had a big mouth of coffee.
Of course I would.
Yeah. Hello.
Hello.
Hello. How are you?
Hello.
Hello, hello.
Okay.
This is Paul. No, it's not. Why couldn't Paul? Paul had family issues?
He used the quote-unquote family issues excuse.
That's what I did last time. Yeah.
Yeah.
The family card.
The gambling bug has apparently struck him again. I hope it doesn't end ugly like it did last time.
I don't even know what that means.
I don't either. He has a gambling problem, so he can't.
Oh, Moving on. Okay.
Yeah.
How's it going?
Good? It's going good. I'm in Arizona right now.
Are you really?
I'm in Scottsdale, a hotbed of Sasquatch activity. I was investigating some sightings down here, and
I think the hairy tail in Scottsdale is not the kind that you're thinking about.
Oh yes, it is. Let me tell you.
Again, I don't know what you're talking about.
How is the sound? Am I too loud right now? How is it? I mean, I'm always too loud, but I mean, technically speaking.
No, you sound as loud as Sam does. You sound fine to me.
Yeah, Sam. You sound good on this end. I'm running a whole new rig today. I had to piecemeal this shit together to be able to get on the show. So just glad it's up and running.
I just hope that hamster keeps running through the whole
thing.
Yeah.
Well, I'm on a borrowed laptop because mine's pretty close to just kicking the bucket. So
hey,
I didn't want it to go out halfway through the show.
That would suck.
Brian, could you possibly, with your mastery of all things computer, perhaps get, well, you're technically proficient, computer crap. Could you possibly make for the show a moving GIF of a chimp smoking a cigarette on a bicycle that's kind of like our engineer of the show?
That's him. What's his name?
Zippy.
Zippy. All right. Yeah. Yeah. All right. Okay. I'll see what I can do about that.
All right.
So maybe one of our audience members could pull that together.
That'd be awesome. Daniel Falconer, maybe.
Yeah. Do you guys want to hear the Matt Moneymaker anecdotes now or after the show? Because I've got a couple.
Of course we're recording. So this is not something you can't say to the public. Can we even let the public know that you have anecdotes, or is like even the information of the anecdotes?
The problem is one of these is from someone who's really close to Matt.
Okay.
Right. So we can't let people know that you have anecdotes.
Oh no, you can.
I'm trying to tease people. I'm trying to like. Yes, Sam has anecdotes, but we will not let you hear them. Is what I'm trying to get at.
No,
so what
no,
you're saying,
no.
You can burn them in private, but not in public. Is that what you're?
Yes, I can burn them to you guys, but not no. Okay, just real quick.
You go ahead. I'll edit this part out of the show. Boy, Sam, that was something.
Wow. Still holding my side. Oh, wait. Let me slap my knee one last time. All right, there we go.
That is.
I'm good.
All right.
Put that in an Easter egg on the CD release.
Right. Well, if you send us $30, we'll give you
plus
a recording.
The results of your closest relative.
We'll send you anyway. Okay, well that was entertaining. So I'm going to say right up front, this is episode 49 of the Bigfoot Show. It is, what is the date? It's the April the 7th, 2013. There you go. I got to tell you, right, I'm going to be really honest. I have no idea what's happening. So half of this month, of the previous month of March, I was focused on the Texas Bigfoot Conference, and the second half I was on vacation. So I don't know what's going on.
They found
anything.
One. He turned himself in, and he thanked me personally for going on the no-kill side. I just want you to know that. He went on.
Did he call you out specifically?
Yes, he did. You couldn't get the – and they analyzed the audio, and so I feel proud about it. Anyway, they're going to have – Sykes is working on it right now.
So we can move on to something else.
Yes.
Excellent. All right.
It's time for the Chupacabra show.
I'm ready. I'm ready for that one. Since the whole rod thing kind of busted out, I got to go for something. We got to talk about Melba Ketchum. I almost feel dirty doing it, but we have to because she just won't shut up and go away. So, Sam, can you kind of bring us up to speed on what's happened in the past?
This is one of the few things. I'm kind of in the same boat with you. I've really unplugged from a lot of it because of other stuff I've got going on. But this is one of the few things that I've kept my hand in because it's just so entertaining.
Right.
I mean, just when you think it can't get any better or any more outlandish or over the top, something new comes along the line and it just raises the bar that much higher. Nothing has changed in terms of it being anything other than a hot casserole of nonsense. I'll just put that out there to start.
Think you got a name of this episode?
I think we're getting close.
She is apparently moving on from Bigfoot.
Ooh. Is she really?
She has said something to the effect that we are too hard to please, or something like that. And she is reportedly looking into the elongated skulls of Peru as being possibly alien hybrids.
Yes.
Some such.
I thought you were going to say something mundane like real estate. Oh, yeah.
Neutralife sales. She's going to be a Neutralife salesman.
And you know what? It's going to be the same photo on the signs in people's yards.
Was it Melbourne Amway? Ketchum.
Yeah.
Amway, I could totally see her showing up on my door selling Amway. But no, that's really
is that really serious? She's wow. Is this like
yes that is out? Yeah, that's the rumor.
I for one am thankful just that we don't have to talk Melba Ketchum anymore.
Well, no, I mean she, you read her Facebook page and it's almost like it's the Onion, you know. Yeah. Her Facebook page has become the Onion of Bigfootery. She's got this one post and she's talking about how they're going to build this super lab and there's going to be robots and they're just going to start tackling all these mysteries of, you know, mummies and giants. And you can almost hear like the intro to In Search Of starting up in the background. But it's crazy. And then, you know, you look at the comments and it's kind of the same handful of people that are, you know, cheerleading and, you know, telling her you go girl and that kind of stuff. And that's it. I mean, I think really the only advancement that's taking place is in the debunking of it. You know, the ongoing thread at the Bigfoot forums, there's actually two or three people who really know their shit.
Yeah, there is.
Who are discussing the actual data that's in the paper and just ripping in a new one. And it's enlightening. I mean, I've learned a little something along the way about genetics and that kind of science-y stuff.
I know we've said this before on the show about ketchup. I have, but it's like in the realm of Sasquatchery characters, I think what she'll be kind of remembered as is that she's a real, and no pun intended, she's a real hybrid, I think, of like Cuckooville and scamminess. You know, she's like, you got a Biscardi who's just, you know, all strong probability, scam. You've got Moneymaker, not really scam, but a lot of way too much hype, you know, that type of thing. But here it's like just bad science, and then this week it's like it just comes off weight, you know, with charging for the paper and all that. It's like it just so hopefully that species will die off with.
Well, I would like to give myself a little pat on the back because I predicted several shows ago that either through just complete or accident or purposefully. She had positioned herself to be the go-to person for DNA testing, you know, and it's come out since then how much these people who were submitting samples were paying. You know, there's numbers floating around out there about people who supported her and given her money. I think now I would agree with Scott. Maybe not 100% scam, maybe not 100% crazy. But the combination of the two has led us to the point now to where, you know, it's funny because she will come out with something and it's almost instantly refuted. I mean, no matter what she says, there's literally a line of people just waiting to shoot it down with good, solid facts and science and knowledge. And instead of owning up to any of it, I haven't seen her once say, oh, you know what? Maybe we were wrong here. Maybe we made a mistake. We're going to go back and we're going to look at this again. Instead of doing that, she's so desperate to keep the train going and on the tracks, they just come up with something even crazier. You know, it's like, okay, our crazy idea that we threw out got shot down, so we're going to defend it with an even crazier idea.
Right.
Yeah.
She's trying to wear us down through attrition.
She's like the Reese's peanut butter cup of the Bigfoot world in that she's the perfect combination of two things, craziness and scamminess. I mean, she represents, you know, there's a great sort of heritage in the world of Sasquatchery of both of these things. And she brings them together in a way that we haven't seen.
So would you say
and hopefully never will again.
Well,
we may never have chosen.
Is she crazy or is she crammy?
Crammy. Definitely crammy.
Copyright 2013. Crammy. All rights preserved.
I'm putting that in my show notes. Crammy. Okay.
Please, crammy. Next topic.
Okay.
Please.
So I think we should try in Bigfoot Show 50, which I got to tell you right now, everyone's like, oh, 50 is going to be like this really big. I have no idea what we're going to do for Bigfoot Show 50.
Well, shouldn't we do the if it works out with the Munns thing?
Well, we're going to come back to the Munns thing. But maybe if it works out because let's talk about Munns right now. Briefly, we're not going to talk about the PGF. We're going to talk about Bill Munns and he was at the Texas Bigfoot Conference, gave a really great presentation, I thought. And so he agreed to be on the show to talk about it. And sort of a coincidental thing that's going to be happening here in the near future is he's actually written up a paper for Meldrum's Relic Hominid Inquiry, and it should be published relatively soon. It's hard to say exactly when that's going to be. He doesn't know the exact date, and these things tend to, you know, get pushed out further than they should. So we're going to try to coordinate those two things. If that looks like it's just going to go on for a long time, maybe we'll get him on ahead of time. The tricky thing is, you need to see what he's showing to be able to speak to what he's talking about. You know, it's going to be really hard, I think, to just sort of like in the abstract say, well, this is what I saw and then this is what I see.
Could we, how about this? Like, okay, since you have the contact with him and because we have a limited amount of time on the show, I mean, like get his, what he would consider his, you know, four or five best points of argument for the validity of the film. And then the correlating photos with that, so that when he talks about it, what he can say, well, in photo A, and then we have those photos
and
up on the site.
But that's why I want to wait for his paper to come out, because a lot of what he showed in the conference is in the paper. So it's perfect if it works out this way. I'm not going to let it go on forever because I really want to have him on. He's you know, a really interesting fellow, and he's got a lot of interesting points to make. So I want to have him on. But if the timing works out well and his paper gets published, then I think that'll be perfect, because a lot of what he showed, not all of what he showed at the conference is in the paper, but a lot of what he showed at the conference is in the paper. And so anyway, that's coming up. I don't know if we'll have that in time for episode 50 or not.
Yeah, it could be.
So you never know. Because, I mean, and then when he was at the conference, he and Meldrum met another guy who they decided would be another great person to sort of review this paper prior to it being published. So that's just going to add more time to the process.
And I'm sure he's a skeptic of Bigfoot, right?
Who, the guy that was there?
No, what I'm saying is, if Munns, and I've watched a little bit of
the reviewer or Munns?
No, I'm saying, if Munns is trying to make a scientific case for the validity of the film, then, I mean, it's got to, I mean, again, it has to pass peer review, but I would hope that they would then present it to people who are not associated or haven't been associated with the Bigfoot field, Melt.
This guy, I don't know who this guy is, but the guy they met at the conference is a doctor who knows things about anatomy and was making comments about the things that Munns was presenting after he presented them that made he and Meldrum think that he would be a good reviewer of the paper. So I don't know who he is. Okay. I didn't meet him. So anyway, that's coming out there. But I think, getting back to my original point, we should make a pledge that the next episode of the show that we record will not have Melba Ketchum in it anywhere.
Yes.
Can we
I
do
agree.
That?
I'm holding my hand up in the air. Yes.
Yes.
Let's all.
I mean, wait a minute. And I can't believe it, because I think I'm maybe the most adamant in favor of this. But I'm trying to think of one condition where it would, unless she like.
Well, it's up to her, right? you know, if she does something that we just can't.
But
ignore.
I mean, if it's still more
right.
horse
if it's
science,
more of the same,
yes,
right.
get it. But if she's some kind of like, hey, I have to apologize because I've been full of shit, which
exactly.
are the odds of her saying that are remote, then of course we would. But
or
she
makes some dramatically new and ridiculous piece of crap assertion, then we have to address that too. But I agree, if it's more of the same, you know, unfortunate individuals who are you know, giving her the props and smacking her on the back, then yeah, we can just move on to something else. Hopefully. I don't know what else we're going to talk about.
Yes, I know. Well, they'll be, you know.
She's carried our water now for like 5 or 6 episodes.
Oh, God. That and the no-kill debate.
Hey, let's get into
what?
That. Come on, huh?
What are you talking about? So the other thing that I was where's my show notes? Crap. Here I am again.
Oh, the Sykes thing?
Yeah, the Sykes thing. So I don't know what to make of this exactly, but let me find the link. Over there on the Bigfoot Evidence blog, a little while back, when was this published? We haven't done a show for like a month.
March 22nd.
March 22nd, so not that long ago. There was an article on the blog about Dr. Brian Sykes, who's doing the DNA study out of Cambridge, going
Oxford.
To Oxford, sorry,
yeah,
Oxford, visiting this country and apparently, reportedly, no longer a skeptic, no longer a doubter. I don't know what happened. You can read the thing for yourself. And I gotta tell you, and maybe it's a double standard on my part. Maybe I'm not being fair to him, but like, I kind of wish he had not done that until after he had published his results. You know what I mean?
You know what, Brian? I would not even go that far here. First of all, let's consider the source of this rumor. It's Bigfoot Evidence. Blogspot, which I think we've already kind of established is what will put up stuff that can turn out to be complete horseshit. Secondly, the body of the whole, you know, it's like, I don't know, about 5-6 paragraphs. It's just some guy saying not why, but that he's this guy that Sykes apparently hung out with, and it's, you know, pretty varied. There's a photo of this guy, Rhett
right.
and Lori, and it's so Sykes, and okay, so that they hung out. But we all know how that can lead to, you know, a guy could be interpreting that Sykes is now a believer. I just find it very, very rumorish. And if he had mentioned something specifically to the guy, like, well, you know, some of the analysis we have done is indicating an unknown primate off this particular lineage and stuff like that, but he apparently didn't. So it's just very vague. So I mean, it's interesting in the sense of, ooh, maybe it's a little bit of a clue, but there's
funny,
not much to it.
What's funny, if you read this thing from Bigfootology, I think that's how you say that, Bigfootology, which is kind of a weird word. He says in here, the guy who wrote this, where is it? He says, he talks about how he and Sykes are on a first name basis now. So
yeah,
like, they're BFFs,
that was
right?
Yeah. Like, well, if we're on a first name basis.
Dr. Sykes and I, who are on a first name basis now, you know, we're buddies. I thought that was kind of funny.
Was another thing that added, I thought, to the, that it was so cornball that I thought, well, then this guy could just be pulling stuff out of his ass. I don't think he's necessarily lying, but I think Sykes could have said something like, oh, I think it's a very interesting phenomena, and like looked at it and then, oh, this guy definitely believes. And it's like, not necessarily.
Dr. Sykes and I are on a first name basis now, and we feel like we are all part of each other's family.
Yeah.
That is how successful this time together has been. And then he says in conclusion, finally, Dr. Sykes will be writing about what has happened while we were in the field last Sunday with Lori Simmons. What I can say at this point is Dr. Sykes is no longer a doubter or skeptic. Something happened to us that has crossed him over into the world of Bigfoot believer, which that sounds terrifying to me, being crossed over into this world of Bigfoot believer.
Yeah, that's dangerous.
Assimilated.
Exactly.
Absorbed.
Resistance is futile. Thanks to Lori Simmons and her, quote, big guy, unquote, as well as the many Team Bigfootology members who showed Dr. Sykes what believers with stories, that believers with stories are credible and genuine people.
Yeah.
I don't even know who Lori Simmons is. I feel like I should.
Yeah.
That name looks vaguely
familiar. You know what? I'm friends with her on Facebook.
Cousin.
And yeah, I couldn't tell you who she is. She seems like a nice lady.
Yeah,
but
I don't know who she is either.
Now, based on what we think we know. Oh, go ahead. Go ahead, Sam.
Well, I was just going to say, I read that this morning. I had heard a little bit of chatter about that, and that was one of the things I wanted to make sure that I actually did before I came on the air today. And I don't really know Redmond Mullins that well. I mean, he could be a good guy, but he's very clearly a shameless self-promoter.
This is Bigfootology. This is the guy.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I don't say that as a dig. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. If you're in the business of promoting yourself, then be shameless about it. I mean, Scott Harriet, perfect example.
Perfect.
But when you read that little blurb from Bigfootology, I mean, take completely you know, take the fact that it's on the Bigfoot evidence blog out of the equation and just read what they've or what Bigfootology has written. Read that in the light of this is coming from someone whose business is to promote themselves. That's kind of what you see there. I mean, Sykes has said nothing. Yeah, he hasn't said, he hasn't said, you know, yay, nay, maybe. I'm not aware of him making any public comments at all about anything that has happened. What little I have read has come from Jeff Meldrum.
Can you guys hear me? I can't hear anything.
I can hear you.
Yeah, we can hear you. Fine.
I can hear you.
Stop interrupting. So anyways, so I mean, it's very possible that what this is not so much, you know, Brian Sykes coming to America and being converted and baptized in, you know,
blood of
in
Bigfoot,
as much as it is Redmond Mullins trying to promote himself and the importance of Bigfootology. And there's even one little line in there that it did kind of rub me the wrong way, where he said that basically Bigfootology is now the conduit for conducting or for conducting any kind of business with Sykes, as if to say,
what?
If you want to if you want to have actually, I mean, hang on, I'll.
I wonder if he's told that to Jeff Meldrum, because.
Yeah.
Wait, I accidentally muted the mic while I was trying to.
It's hard to make your point when you mute your mic.
Yes, exactly. Well, I wanted to go, but I want to make sure that I don't misquote him and that I do get it right here. Let's see. View all comments. I told you I'm on a new laptop, so bear with me.
This is exciting stuff right here. This is compelling.
Can you play some Calliope music in the background?
You know, here I am trying to be fair to the man and not misquote him.
Well, who gives a crap about that being fair? Do you see somebody on Facebook told us to grow up?
Yes.
That's funny.
Yeah.
Grow up.
Okay, here it is. Yeah.
What a dick.
He's butthole. He's talking about the lab and everything, and then he gets down here, and this lab's also now helping as a backup lab for the DNA project. Bigfootology is the gateway for testing artifacts from the field, but we will not overwhelm them, and we will extensively document any material sent to us to pass on to this lab. So I mean, this is a guy, he's trying to get his 15 minutes, and you know,
but here,
God bless him.
And I don't know what Sykes is doing, and I don't know if the Bigfootology dude is blowing it out of his own hole or what's going on. But what I like about Sykes is that he's not part of this madness, right? He's not in this effed up circus of a community. He's got no connection to it other than he has sort of a connection professionally with Meldrum, and that's how he gets the samples and things like that. But he doesn't go hang out with weirdos in the woods. And I'm saying weirdos in the best possible way, because some of these weirdos are my best friends. I totally get that. But he doesn't do it, right? That's why he was really cool. And but now if he's part of the circus train,
I don't think. But again, like Sam said, there's no direct quote from him.
I know.
And then plus, not only that, but in the last paragraph again, where the guy says, we'll be writing about what has happened while we were in the field last Sunday. And what I can say at this, intimating that what happened in the field is what turned Sykes, where he says, what I can say at this point is Dr. Sykes is no longer a doubter or a skeptic, unless what we know about Sykes, which is that he's got a good reputation, unless a friggin' Bigfoot walked right out in front of him and stood there, I don't think he's going to go, I did hear a weird scream. I think Bigfoots exist, or there's an indentation in the ground. Right. So I go with Sam's analysis that I think you got this guy. He's a hypester, and this guy came over for whatever reason. His wife's pretty good looking. That could be part of it. And he's just hyping this guy's visit.
No, that's not his wife. That's Lori.
Oh, well, whoever. Yeah, Lori is pretty good looking. Anyway, it just sounds like but. On the positive, potentially positive side, I mean, maybe if Sykes kind of intimated that some of the analysis that has been going on, which is really that's the actual science going on. Look at these hair samples that you guys had submitted, other people had submitted, and maybe something at this point in the analysis there is showing some signs of interest. Maybe that's what he's referring to. But
maybe.
You know,
if I could give an analogy, there's a really great documentary out called Ghost Bird. And it's about the hunt for the ivory-billed woodpecker. I highly recommend it. It's on Netflix. You should definitely check it out. But it is the perfect corollary for the search for Bigfoot. I mean, you could literally – you could go into this documentary and just take out the word ivory-billed woodpecker and put in Bigfoot, and nobody would notice. I mean, it's almost creepy how similar it is. But that's kind of what happened in this case is, you know, they had these sightings in Brinkley in Arkansas, and the scientists who were interested in the subject, they started to look at the evidence that was being put out. There was a paper that was produced on it and published. They started going out there into these areas. So, you know, if Sykes is conducting this study and he's having any kind of interesting results at all, as a curious man of science, it would make sense for him to go out and take a look around.
Exactly.
And it would make complete sense for the carnival that is Bigfoot to try to drag the man down every chance they get. And that's
latch onto him.
Yes, you know, latch on to him, use him to pull yourself
up.
You're either trying to elevate yourself off of him, or you know, you're trying to drag him down. Because nobody loves to eat their own more than Bigfooters. So,
and again, I'm okay with that as long as you eat.
Well, that
as long as you eat what you kill,
will eat their babies
what you
too.
Kill, exactly.
Yeah. I'm just saying, let's give the guy a chance. I would love to see him come out with his study, publish his paper, and then, you know, as an anecdote or an add-on or whatever, say, you know what, as part of this study, I went to the Pacific Northwest. I had a really interesting experience.
Your name was Laurie Simmons.
Dude.
No. It's horrible.
So, I'm just trying to break it up.
We do need to grow
up. Now, Sam, can I on your point about that movie, the Ghost Bird. I also want to recommend a movie not as directly scientifically related, but man, is it applicable to this field. And it's a relatively new film. It's
still available.
available at squatchfilms.com. No, it's really good. You guys, it's called Room 237. And what the film is, it's friggin' crazy, dude. And you guys, if you definitely rent this. It is all these different people. It's very well directed, very well shot. About 10 different people, relatively educated, well-spoken. You never see them in the film. You just hear their analysis. And it's each of these persons' interpretation of the film The Shining.
Oh, cool.
And you go from one guy who is absolutely convinced, talking in a cool, rational-sounding voice, that this film is obviously about the white man wiping out Native Americans to a large degree. And he shows these scenes where you see the cans with the Indian head on The Shining. And you get this and you go, well, some of that sounds crazy. Maybe there's a little truth because Kubrick was a smart guy and could throw stuff in. Mm-hmm. So that's that. And then it goes to another coolly rational-sounding voice. And the guy's absolutely certain this is an analogy of the Holocaust. And he uses all the examples and there are eight more of these that get one of which, and again, the guy sounds very rational, very cool, about how this movie proves or strongly suggests that Kubrick was really the guy behind the shooting of the fake moon landing and how he gives clues.
Lord.
You mean he's not?
Yeah, I know. No, it's Spielberg when he was nine. Actually did that. But it's just a great film about showing how people can interpret the same thing in a multitude of ways and be completely dead wrong about it, or perhaps to a degree right on something. It's just a really good film. And any of the listeners out there, I recommend it because I think it just shows, again, the value of the scientific method of what meanings of things are as opposed to actual like quantitative measurement of things, which is what science is. Okay, can you weigh it? Can you
observation? It's observation.
Yeah, can you replicate
right.
the results? Exactly. So anyway, that's
well. As long as we're making recommendations, reading / listening to a new book called Between Man and Beast. And it's about the guy who brought back the first gorilla specimens, like out of the African, you know, bush. And right. It's a fascinating, fascinating book. It's really, really cool.
Is it a German guy?
No, he was actually he was ethnically French. He grew up in Africa, spent time in America, sort of considered himself to be an American, even though he was French and spoke with a heavy French accent. His father was French. He considered himself an American. But it's a great book so far. It's really well written. You can really get the sense of him being out there in the jungle with his native guides. It's just him, right? Just one white man, and with all these guys around him, and you know their beliefs around what gorillas are, and then you know he's trying to get these samples out, but when they kill one, they want to eat it, and they want to eat its brain because it makes them strong, and like it makes them virile, and they can have lots of babies, and they're great hunters. I mean, it's just really a great book. And then apparently, what'll happen? I'm not to that point yet, but when he brings them out. It sparks this huge debate about evolution and what a gorilla is and how they're related to us and everything else. Anyway, really good book. I really recommend it.
Hey, did we mention on the last show or one of the last shows about I think we did briefly about great Discovery Channel show, the whole thing with the Neanderthals and the belief of why Neanderthals disappeared.
Yeah, wasn't that Nova? That was Nova, right?
Yeah. My God. That was just amazing.
They didn't actually go extinct. They were absorbed.
Absorbed. Yeah. We could make them. Yeah. And they just became...
and actually, I did there's these things where you can do swabs of your cheek and send them off for DNA samples. I did that because I wanted to know how much Neanderthal I have. 2.6%.
Whoa. What's the average? Is it like 4?
2.3.
So you're a little above.
Let me verify this while you're talking. I'm a little above. I was hoping to be more, actually. I wanted to be a lot more, but...
So you're slightly hairier than the average man, is what you're saying.
Apparently. I'm trying to remember what your brow ridge looks like.
It's fairly thick.
The angle of your forehead.
I like to wear bear skins. Maybe that's why.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I'm logging into it. It's 23andMe is where I did this, and it takes a really long time.
What did it cost you, if you don't mind me asking?
I think it was it wasn't cheap. It was like $200 or something.
Ooh.
But I really wanted to know.
You could write that off because you do a show about...
Oh, sure. I should totally do that.
Yes.
Too bad I already did my taxes.
Lord knows this is a revenue stream.
Neanderthal ancestry. Here we go. Hold on a minute. So I'm 2.8%, and the average 23andMe user is 2.7. So I don't know what the average person is, but the average person who has their DNA analyzed by 23andMe is 2.7. I'm 23. I'm sorry. I'm 2.8%. I'm in the 63rd percentile, whatever that means.
Now, are you sure this isn't one of those things like when you're a kid in high school and they send the thing home to your parents and say, get your kid's picture published in the top 500 achievers in Georgia?
Anywhere on the envelope was the word Ketchum.
I did have to spit into a vial. That's what you have to do. You have to you have to fill up a vial with spit. And then
was reading material provided?
No.
Picture of a steak.
That's food porn. Yeah, they gave me food porn, and I just started to drool. Spit in a tube, and then you mail it off, and literally, it was 5 weeks later, I got the results.
Now
a lot more than just Neanderthal, right? I mean, that's just one of the things they tell you. They tell you all kinds of other stuff. Like
what else? What else did they learn about you?
Oh, good lord. Hold on, let me tell you. Family tree.
Died 5 years ago.
Well, they tell me what part of Europe my relatives are from on both sides, on my mother's side and my father's side. And if I had known, I would have loaded this stuff up in advance, but I didn't. They just redid their site too. This pisses me off. Ancestry composition. Here we go. So I'm 99.3% European, whatever that means, and 0.7% unassigned. No idea what that means.
This is going to be weird. Dude, 5 years from now, when DNA technology advances even further, it's going to come back? Sasquatch.
Oh, I was going to say lemur.
That's why you're interested, because you're coming back to your ants. Yeah, I have very hairy forearms, and that's why I think I might
qualify. So of my 99% European, 88% of me is Northern European, 0.2% is Southern European, and 11% is non-specified European. No idea
couldn't you accomplish the same thing just farting around on Ancestry.com?
Well, kind of, but then, but you can't go back. Well, here's an example. Here's an example. So on my father's side, now this is completely un-Bigfoot related. I'm sorry to everyone who has to listen to this, but I've done this, the farting around on Ancestry.com, which you can spend a lot of time on Ancestry.com. On my dad's side, it stops at his grandfather. I can't get past that man. So like, I have no idea where. Anyway, so it's cool, and you know, they tell you a lot of stuff about health risks. And of course, all of this is just percentages based. I mean, it's not, none of this means anything from the standpoint of like, they can't tell you, oh, you're going to get heart disease. They can, exactly. They just give you percentages based on your DNA makeup. Yeah. But anyway, it's pretty cool. 2.7 or whatever I said. Did I say 2.8%? 2.8%.
Yeah,
2.8% Neanderthal. That's me.
Wow.
I was hoping for higher. I really was.
I wonder what the highest has been in somebody. I mean, because I've met some hikers. I'm thinking the double digit realm might have been that threshold. This is a guy, seriously, his name's Tattoo Joe. And this is all before this. And he's one of these guys, he can hike, he doesn't even work out. And he broke like the speed record on the PCT. But I would joke with him, I go, dude, you've got to have Neanderthal DNA. He's just a brute, you know?
Could be.
Yeah. Mm.
Awesome. All right. Back to Bigfoot.
Yeah.
What else did I want to talk about today?
Yeah. Oh, what about that the kid?
Oh, the kid blogger. Yeah, let me pull that up.
How old is that kid?
He's like 17. His name. I don't even know if he listens to the show. I have no idea.
Jay Cooney.
Jay, yeah.
Yeah. He's a you know, high school student, and he's blogging about cryptids, and he's incredibly well spoken. It's pretty cool, actually. I posted that to our Facebook page a couple of days ago.
Yeah, I read a couple of his blog entries, and the thing I really like about him is as I'm reading his entries, they read like the high school persuasive papers that I would have written when I was 16 or 17. I mean, you can almost see like a young, unjaded, unbattle scarred version of yourself in his work, and it's definitely good. I mean, I would recommend it to anybody that's out there. It's way better than a lot of the crap that we have to read through for the show.
His blog is called Bizarre Zoology. I can't even say it. Bizarrezoology.blogspot.com. Wait, I'm falling behind on my show notes. I've decided I'm going to start doing show notes now. So that's what you're hearing me type in the background.
I'm looking on the list too. What you would recommend?
There were a ton of questions.
There were so many. Do you want to hit them? You want to start going through questions? Since people ask us these questions, we should
actually.
We ask for people to give us questions, and then we talk about whatever we want.
At least throw them a crumb occasionally to keep them interested.
What is that photo? Oh my god! When did you post that photo of the guy with the hairy gray back?
Like that?
Somebody
posted that to our wall.
It's Bob Hieronymus, by the way.
Oh, it's this. I don't even know how to say this guy's name. Yilik Citric.
It's Kelly Curtis backwards.
Oh, you know this guy?
Yeah, he's.
He's okay. Kelly Curtis. Nice job, Kelly. Yeah. I thought you were like from Yugoslavia or something. Anyway, yeah, there's this dude, and you got to see this picture. I mean, this guy, and the best part is he's wearing these funny little shorts and these red boots and no shirt, and it looks like he's got an Angora sweater on.
It's like ski boots, and I'm not kidding. You could comb his back. I mean, you could. It's like
you could
put
braid
a part
that
down the middle.
You could. Yeah. You could do like cornrows and that stuff.
Yeah, he might be 15% Neanderthal. It's possible.
Something, man. Anyway, so. Let's see here. Brian Palm asked us about Dr. Sykes, and we already talked about him. I'd like to hear more about clucking they do. Also, the apes, lol. I love people on the internet. Myakka. What about Myakka? Is there something new about Myakka?
That's the orangutan looking thing with the palm frond that looks like it's glued to the front.
There?
Yes. I hadn't anything. Oh, what? Yes.
What, Sam? What? What is it, Sam?
I've actually prepared for this. I have no idea. But at this moment, I'm going to channel Karnak the Magnificent. Sweet. And I want our readers to come back on the page and tell me if I did a good job or not.
All right.
And I promise you that I am about as unexposed to this story as you can get, short of the immediate intro. There's a sighting and there's a photograph. It's crappy, pretty blurry. Could be anything. Could be one thing. Could be two things. Multiple people saw this, allegedly. There's a photo of all the people who saw it, and it's really clear. But the photo of the whatever it is or whatever they are is blurry. Somebody went and investigated. Rather than keeping it on the DL, they told a bunch of people. Hoaxing broke out immediately. Yeah. There was rumor of a cover-up. Somebody involved the government. And the investigation is continuing with no resolution in sight. That is
so just your typical Bigfoot world cluster fuck.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Nice.
So, yeah.
Okay, well, there you go. Brian, you wanted to know about it.
We were able to chew up 45 seconds. Thank you.
Thomas Kelly Tate, may not be his real name, wants to know, if Bigfoot played guitar, what genre would he jam?
Hair band.
Perhaps.
Yeah. Maybe a little mellower, you know, a little...
I was thinking like
a jug band.
Cat Stevens, yeah.
Maybe. Well, it depends on his mood.
I think it's more of like a folksy sort of 60s pop kind of.
Yeah, Joni like Mitchell.
Mamas and the Papas or something.
Yeah. I could see that.
All right. There you go.
Maybe we should wait on episode 50.
You know what, people? I'm going to say right now, you asked us for a show. We obviously didn't have one to give you, and we're just recording this instead.
We had an hour yet? Almost an hour.
Well, no, because we had to waste all that time with the secret stuff we can't talk about.
Which I'm still giggling
over. Hilarious. Yeah.
Andrew Austin has a long question. Let me see this. In all seriousness, so be serious. I've had a theory that I've had put into the question box at the conference, but it was never... He must have gone to the Texas Bigfoot Conference. Is it possible that the werewolf legends of Eastern Europe stemmed from sightings of wood apes? The people who lived there in older times would have had no idea what an ape or a monkey was. Therefore, they would have used their own knowledge base to explain what they had seen. The creatures looked human-like, but were definitely animals. Of all the animals that live in that area, the wolf would be one of the most dangerous and most respected. So maybe the people just mixed the two to make a man-wolf, the whole only coming out in the full moon... Could be explained that that would be the best time to observe one of the creatures. That seems hot.
It's a really good question.
Seems plausible.
You guys dropped the ball at the conference if y'all didn't.
I did not. I was not the moderator of the panel discussion, so you cannot blame that on me.
Well, I think it's really interesting because I heard something a long time ago, and God help me, I could not possibly quote it, but the person was basically saying that if you saw an animal that was completely alien to you, for instance, if you had never seen an elephant and you had no idea what an elephant was,
right,
you would have to use things that you knew to describe it.
Sure.
You wouldn't be able to say, oh, it looked like an elephant.
Right.
Well, you don't know what an elephant looks like. So you would say, okay, you know, it had a body like a rhinoceros, but it was, you know, four times bigger.
Right.
And it had, you know, it had this thing coming off of its face that was almost like a tentacle or a snake, or, you know, I mean, you could use
Uncle Willie's Johnson.
And it was really interesting to me because in the perspective of what he's saying here,
grow up, will you please?
You know, if you didn't know what an ape was, if you didn't know what if you'd never seen a primate, imagine what would happen if you saw an orangutan or a gorilla or, you know, siamang or any of those.
Well, that's why, like in Borneo, they were called the wild men of Borneo, because what was the, you know, they assume they were so close, and it is true. I mean, genetically closer than, you know, the millions and millions of other species. That's, you know, what you go with. But I wanted to say about the werewolf thing. I kind of agree that it could be, but the only thing that would be on the negative side is if you had a werewolf, I assume that the we're actually talking about werewolves. Okay, that the snout would be rather pronounced like a wolf, and dog vast majority of the relic hominid sightings is basically a flat face.
Yeah.
So, I don't know.
Some of this gets to, you know, we don't have to go that far back. In Wisconsin, they have the dog man. They have dog man sightings, which, you know, except for the fact that people have reported, only in Wisconsin for some reason, you know, wolf-like faces. A lot of these dogmen sightings sound like Bigfoot to me. But some folks actually come out and say, oh, yeah, it had like the legs of a dog and a long snout, which, of course, is not. It's not a Bigfoot if that's the case. But, yeah, I think it's a reasonable supposition. I don't know how you prove it. But I don't think it sounds perfectly reasonable to me, but that's because, you know, I believe Bigfoot is real. So
I think the only strike against it is there's such a rich history of wild men in Europe.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't like the werewolf was all you had. You had all of these varied legends about different incarnations and interpretations of wild men. So you know, you've got a very good competitor out there for, you know, what could be accounting for these legends.
Well, who was it? Was it Lauren Coleman who, in the chapter of one of his books, talks about the wild man legend and actually draws a line? And I don't know how he did it anymore, but you know, between like the Jolly Green Giant and you know, the wild men of Europe, and saying that that's all part of the same tradition that just turned into a commercial mascot along the way. It's an interesting thing.
I think wasn't that it was the Jolly Green. Yeah, and then there's that one thing on a crate that was in California.
Right.
It's a giant, right. Exactly, and that maybe is related to.
Yeah,
he needed to write another book. So
he hasn't written a book in a while, has he?
I don't think so.
What's going on with him?
I don't. You know, he's getting up there, man. He's like, what is Lauren? He's like upper 60s, and
still,
you know,
right.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Maybe, I mean, you know.
I don't want to start any rumors. I'm just asking.
I don't either. But, you know, I mean, he's written a lot of books, dude. A lot of which is kind of rehashing of stuff. And so maybe he realized, he looked, he went, man, I rehash a lot of stuff. Maybe I'll sit back a little bit.
So Nathan Miller asks, the new trend of weekend Bigfoot hunters running around the woods, beating on trees and howling, who, what is going to be confused more, the legit Bigfoot hunters or Bigfoot himself?
Great question.
That actually is a good question.
I heard a really interesting anecdote just, I think it was in the last week or two. Someone I know up in the Northeast was saying that they had gone out, and the only thing that they had observed was other people out in the woods hooting and wood knocking. And I thought, I mean, what kind of strange world have we stepped into? Because, you know, when I first got into this and actively going out into the field back in about 2001 – the idea that you might be overlapping with someone.
Yeah,
possibly.
I mean, yeah. I mean, yeah. Nobody else is crazy enough to be doing this shit. You
know? Right.
Yeah.
But now it's become so, and especially in areas like that where the potential habitats are so limited.
Right.
That it's very easy to, you know, have a bunch of people ending up in the same.
Well, what you need is this like perfect combination of accessibility and some sort of reason to suspect they're there. You know, I think of one of the reasons I don't want to go to Skookum Meadow anymore, even though Skookum Meadow is a beautiful, beautiful place. It's awesomely just – it's a great place to go, Skookum Meadow. But if you're going to, quote unquote, hunt the Squatch – you don't want to go there because, you know, two campsites over there could literally be a guy who's responding to your wood knocks with his own wood knock, right? I mean, and I think that it's you know, overfished, so to speak, right?
Yeah.
And I think that's entirely plausible now if you – yeah. I mean, you've got to go off the beaten track, I think, to really get away from that sort of potentiality.
Yeah. Well, that's why the water – I mean, we talked about this on other shows, that it's just the amount of you know, it's harder and harder with the advent of TV shows and the internet to separate the wheat from the chaff. I think it's much harder now because you just have, you know, you have this plausible idea presented to the masses. Oh, man, you see a show and there's Bobo running around and I can run around like, you know, and they get out and it's fun.
Yeah.
Granted, or, you know,
it's a hell of a lot of fun
if you're new to it.
Yeah.
But as far as the potential science of it, I think it makes it more difficult for exactly the reasons we're talking about.
Yeah, you have to be able to somehow control that out of if you're trying to go out there and, you know, conduct real research, whatever that means. You'd have to somehow control out the possibility that you are inadvertently, you know, interacting with another bunch of, you know, Homo sapiens a quarter mile away.
And I would add the caution too. If you're going to an area because it's the only area that you have. I mean, if you're in a part of the country where, you know, potential habitat is so limited that you literally have like one place to go, you need to be extra skeptical about everything. Because not only do you risk the possibility of confirmation bias, where, you know, you start to read into things just to support the effort that you're doing in this area, because you know there's nowhere else to go. So this is where you need the Sasquatch to be. Mm. But a lot of other people are going to realize that that's the one place everybody goes.
Yeah.
And so you're going to have that overlap where people are out there doing things that you might misinterpret or mistake as being legitimate. And then you're going to have the nutbags and the hoaxers and all the people out there running around barefoot and, you know, in Vibram shoes and doing, you know, God knows what to mess with you. Yeah. So just, you know, if you're that limited in your areas, you just need to be that much more careful about
it. So it's actually been a good thing for the Sasquattle. I think in one sense that you have, I mean, as far as them not getting captured or shot or whatever, it's they're sitting up on the hill. God, thank God there's a bunch of these people interested, because they're not going to find us now. They're going to be right behind a tree when three Bobo lookalikes are sitting there, you know, deciding what kind of scream they want to do. So I guess it has both. You have more people out there, so therefore it does increase the probability of some type of legitimate discovery. But on the other hand, like you're saying, the overlapping, it makes audio evidence even more even lower on the
well, especially the stuff that sounds like the stuff that's out there. So if you record an Ohio howl, it sounds like the Ohio howl. It might be the Ohio howl. You know, it may not be. Christopher Brown, unrelated to me, as far as I know, says animals typically have a range, a geographic area that where they are found. I'd like to hear your thoughts on where the range might be. BFRO obviously thinks they're in each and every lower 48 states, but that seems implplausible. So where do you think they are? And better yet, where do you think they are not?
First off, can either of you name all 50 states? Because I can't.
Can, but it would sure be incredibly could. Boring.
No, I can.
I think the BFRO would say they're in 49 states, by the way, not just the lower 50. I'm sorry, lower 48.
I think they would be smart enough to leave out Hawaii.
I think they would too.
Yeah.
Just giving them that.
Well, you have to quantify what you're talking about. Are we talking about a range where they live, or are you talking about an area where one might have to pass through? Yeah. You know, there's a term in biology. It's called a vagrant, and it's literally where a species is spotted in an area where it doesn't belong for whatever reason. I mean, if it's a bird, it could have been blown there by a storm.
And that happens.
If it's a bear, it could have gotten pushed out of its territory because of another bear or a fire or food or whatever.
In the past year or so, there was a mountain lion that I think it was tagged like in South Dakota that turned up in Connecticut. Mm-hmm. You know, This thing moved.
Yeah.
Turned out it hitchhiked though.
On a train. He was a hobo.
Hobo cougar.
But you know, I mean, I think in terms of the number of states, you're probably talking about definitely less than half. As far as sustaining, you know, populations. I mean, I think even here in Georgia, I don't know. There's very few areas where they could stay for extended periods of time. Scott, you and I talked about it when you were here hiking the AT, and you asked me, well, where do they go? It's a good question, and my answer would be they go where the people aren't. And so in an area like this, they would have to be move with the seasonal movement of the people. And after deer season, basically end of year till about the 1st of March, mid-March, nobody's really going out in the woods. There's nothing going on. There's no hunting seasons. It's cold. It's crappy.
And the thing is, it's so what I was struck by is that it's at least in those woods that I saw around the AT is how bare it is. I mean, it's like bare. All the leaves are gone. And so there is no way you would convince me at that point in the year that there would be anything like a Sasquatch.
But the thing is, you know, you get down to some of the hollers.
Yeah.
Using the vernacular, these laurel thickets and things like this, and you could absolutely believe that these things could be there and not be spotted. And so, you know, my roundabout way of getting to answering the question is, I think in some areas like Southeast Oklahoma, Northwest Louisiana, Southwest Arkansas, that corner of the world. I don't think they have to move. I think they've got everything right where they're at. Places like this along the Appalachians, I think they would have to if they were going to exist here. And ultimately, you know, if you're talking about a species that is either hardwired or adapted to avoiding us, one of the keys to staying hidden is you move as little as possible. Because the more you move, the more likely you are to be seen.
Exactly. So.
I think that there's a danger in – well, there's two things. There's two things. The first thing I would say is it's a fascinating possibility that this is an animal that would normally, if left to its own devices, just stay in one spot, sort of like a mountain gorilla. Yeah, mountain gorillas have very small ranges. Lowland gorillas have very wide ranges, and they probably do that for different – but it would be interesting if this was an animal that would – like to stay in one spot but moves because people force it. That would be an interesting thing to know. I don't know how you know that at this point. But I'm thinking about the the second part I would say is that I think that we have to be careful not to say, well, they live here because of this. You know, this happens. I hear, you know, Renee on Finding Bigfoot say these things all the time. Well, we suspect things, but we don't know. I mean, my own personal experience tells me that I think that they're furtive and that they're trying to avoid detection, but I don't think they're necessarily trying to get away from us all the time.
I would say that strongly. I think there are certain times, and some of my own experiences have led me to believe, they will deliberately initiate contact.
Yeah.
Now, we're left to speculate the why.
Exactly.
But it's I've seen some things happen that, I mean, if this animal was trying to get away from me, what happened would not have happened. It's just that
exactly
simple.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. No, I'm exactly with you. And so the other thing I would say, just sort of a corollary to that, is, you know, we have this expectation they have to live in the forests, which I think leaves a lot of people to say, well, they can only live in the Pacific Northwest because that's where all the forests are, because they don't know about where the forests are. And I also think about the time that Alton Higgins drove me out to where there were a series of sightings over the course of quite a while. I think it was over the course of a couple of years. And it was in a part of Oklahoma that did not look like it should have Bigfoot in it. But if you look at it from up above, there are sort of stretches of wooded area that follow creeks and streams. There's lots of water going through the area. So you could see how it could happen. But it would not be where you would go to look for Bigfoot, right? Because it doesn't look, to use the vernacular, squatchy enough. So yeah. I used to think that I knew more about this than I think I know now based on the experience that I've had. I think it's not as easy to say they would never go into this kind of an area, because I think Sam's right. I think that some of them are vagrants. I also think it's entirely possible that there are places where they will stay because nobody will... Well, for whatever reason. And it could be that around that you have vagrants and sort of nomadic and maybe individual males that are just roaming around. I don't know. I mean, I honestly have no idea.
Well, that's the honest answer. You know, it's like I think it's all about what you've read, what you've experienced.
Right.
And then it's simply a probability you're assessing it. I mean, right. I am one of those who I feel 99.9% that in the Pacific Northwest there are some of these things. I'll stretching up into British Columbia. What happened to me.
Yeah.
You know, Green's book, the amount of sightings up there, the strong history. Other areas, you know, I can't say I'm 100. Yeah, well, I'm not 100% anywhere, but it would go lower as we get, like, hearing what you're talking about in Southeast Oklahoma. I mean, it's fairly compelling to me, but it's not as compelling as the volume of sightings there and what I directly experienced. So I would put it as like, yeah, I'm definitely open to that they could be in Southeast Oklahoma. They could be in, like Sam was saying, in parts of Louisiana and parts of Georgia. It's all about the sighting info you hear. That's what, but again, it's just a story. But again, you have to weigh the story.
So here's something that I found interesting, because I had never gone into Oklahoma or anything, right? Prior to hooking up with the new and improved NAWAC, formerly TBRC, and what was interesting to me?
There's a new name now?
Yeah, there's a new name. We'll get to it. What's interesting to me is in that part of the country, There are as many local Bigfoot sort of popular culture items, you know, little stores, little restaurants, little signs. It is just as much a part of the popular culture there as it is in the Pacific Northwest. But for whatever reason, because of the way our media works or because of, you know, Patterson-Gimlin film or whatever, what the Pacific Northwest part is very well known. The Southeast Oklahoma part is not, even though it's just as strong and just a part of the local culture there. It just isn't well known outside of that area. So it kind of blew me away when you go in there and there's like, it's everywhere. Bigfoot in the culture, in what you see around you is everywhere, just like the Pacific, like Northern California. It was crazy.
That's interesting.
It is. Yeah. I think you should, you should visit the area.
Well, you know, I would. I'm sure. I keep waiting for the invite from you guys, but I don't
check your mailbox. Check it regularly.
So here's the thing, too. You know, we're speculating about this. What I think is interesting is, let's say if tomorrow, if you know, Joe Blow hits one with his car, there it is, type specimen. Got
boom, done.
It would still essentially at this point in time still leave us with that. We know that where there was at least one here,
right.
And so it's reasonable to assume there are other ones in this area, but. It still tells us nothing about Georgia or Southeast Oklahoma.
Well, here's the parallel that I make is I'm reading this / listening to this Between Man and Beast book. The author points out that we know a lot about mountain gorillas and how they live because mountain gorillas stay in small groups. They move in relatively small ranges and they're easy to find. But we don't know even to this day very much about how the lowland gorillas live because they range over this huge, thick area. And so most of what we know about them is because they're the ones that we have in the zoos, almost not entirely, but most of the ones that are in zoos are lowland gorillas. But we don't know anything really about how they live because of where they live. And I would imagine that 20 years after X date, you know, after it's been conclusively shown that these things exist, we'll be in the same boat. We still won't know a lot about them because they're just so
hard to
find.
There'll still be a mix of this perception.
Absolutely.
Hoaxes, I think, will drop off.
I bet there'll be more. I think people will be coming out of the woods talking about the Bigfoot.
Well, yeah, you're right.
I think it'll be more.
Yeah, that would be.
But anyway,
That would be an interesting. And I don't know if Brown. I haven't read any of Brown's stuff. It sounds like a lot of Bigfoot is monsters type stuff. But it would be an interesting, like, dramatic script to write from that perspective that Bigfoot has been verified, and then doing a scenario of what does that mean? Zooing or are there more hoaxes or whatever, but
good question, Christopher.
That was a good one, Christopher. Jason Rankin says, how about the absurdity of finding Bigfoot sending their team all over the globe instead of spending the money setting up somewhere like Washington, Oregon, Northern California, where they might actually find something? Jason, you're assuming they want to find something, right? What they want more than anything is for you to watch the show.
Yep.
So I agree. If they really wanted to find Bigfoot, they would just camp out in one spot and not leave. But that's not what they want.
The show is horrible.
It's not horrible. Actually, the little behind, they just did the season finale when they went to Vietnam and found nothing. They went all the way to Vietnam. They did one of those little behind the scenes things, which just makes you, say what you want about Bobo. I just think he looks like a great guy. I would love to hang out with him.
I've met him.
So Mike Smith wants to know when the next Bigfoot Information Project podcast is coming out. No, I don't know. Have you guys know anything about this Shooting Bigfoot movie? I just saw the teaser trailer. I know nothing about it except that Rick Dyer's involved, so it's probably total crap.
That should be another guy we add to the Ketchum list.
We're not going to have anything to talk about.
I mean, the guy's an admitted hoax. Remember, and he even said, I'm going to do it again.
Yes.
And so it's almost like
the mouth breathers out there keep going, I wonder what Rick's got. He's got nothing.
Yeah.
End of discussion.
If confirmed and sufficiently studied, what is – oh, this is from Russell
Bynum.
If confirmed and sufficiently studied, what is likely to be confirmed or denied about its physical attributes, habits, and social life currently speculated about? Oh, man, I don't even know.
See, this is something I think is really interesting because, you know, with Bigfoot, you have the complete spectrum. You know, there are people who are on one side and they say that this is a normal biological animal that is no more different or unique or special than any other animal. And then on the other side, you know, they're jumping through time warps and they're being dropped off by aliens. and you know, just absolute craziness. And I've always wondered, you know, if we get one, how long will that craziness continue? You know,
right.
once you have a physical specimen and you can show, you know, it's not jumping through time warps because we're keeping it in captivity. Or
well, what if you find this sensor, you know, inside of an alloy?
It's not capable of telepathy because the only way it's communicated so far is throwing its feces at the window. You know, how much longer will those stories keep continuing and perpetuating of these people out there claiming that, you know, they ride unicorns and shit rainbows and whatever else, other nonsense there is? Because I personally, I don't think it'll go away. I think that, you know, I think that
I mean, there's people who think crazy stuff about long established animals. I mean, there's people who think, you know, there's a wide spectrum of craziness in the world. And I think you're right. It wouldn't go away in relation to Bigfoot. But I think in reference to Russell's question, the thing is, we got to remember when science, quote unquote, a scientist is observing something, you know, you in a sense, a purely objective observation changes the scenario. So it's like, what are we going to learn? Well, if we put them in zoos, we're not going to learn that much about what they do in the wild. I think the way that would be the most objective is if it could be done, if you have one in the wild, mm-hmm. and you attach something to it that can record, or you know they're in this zone, and you set up enough cameras that then, independent of a human that they would sense, then you can observe it in a more objective fashion because it's not on guard against us. You would learn more that way. So
well, it goes back to the point that we have a lot of lowland gorillas in zoos, but we don't know anything about how they live because they're living in zoos. You know, and you know, I think the way that you study primates in the wild has been pretty well established. But to your point, just being there changes how they behave.
Exactly.
So
well, that's what I would say again and again. And I'm not bringing this up about the kill no kill the topic. But if, however, the verification happens, that if you are able to let's say we have a type specimen, guy hits one in the car, somebody shoots one, whatever, we got it. Okay, so now we go out. And we put a tracking device in it. Somehow we've got this physiology of one, so we know, okay, the tranquilization will probably work.
But we tie like a really long string to it?
No. But you put something that we know this technology
there's a cup
exists
on the other end.
And then you know, okay, you've got a tracking device on it, not
right,
on a cuddle,
right,
but it's in its body.
Yikes.
Then it wakes up and you let it live its life, and then you track it via satellite or just and this is why I think it would actually be better that a private group would do this. Because if this was some public government funded whatever, then you get all the yahoos out there, they would find out where it is. If it was privately done and this data was gathered that way with corresponding videos, it's like, you know, okay, we know that Gugu, we'll call him, Gugu's at the top of this ridge right now. We know he's there. So now you do a little tiger, you know, circle thing, and you get good videographers in there, and then probably one or two of the guys would be able to get close enough to get a little more video. We know it's gone 50 miles in 2 days. Actual data,
right,
where it doesn't have any reason to believe that it's being observed.
Oh,
or
it's
being
like what they do with bears. But the question is, can you do that with primates? No, I don't believe. I don't know this for a fact, but I don't believe anyone's done that with primates.
Well, I think the problem, as far as obviously with collars, is that because they have arms and they could probably get it off. That's why I think it has to be something that is.
Well, Gugu's friends want to know why he has a flashing blue light on the top of his head now.
Exactly. He didn't have Gugu, why flashing? But I think like something like quick insert cauterized.
Ouch!
It's still out for
Man,
well,
you're cruel.
It's out. But at least I'm not killing it.
What
unless,
you do?
Unless I'm hungry.
Things.
Unless I'm hungry, and then it wakes up. And it's
Here, here's interesting. I just found this out just recently about when they collar a bear in Minnesota for tracking purposes, for studying purposes, legally, if you have a bear license to, you know, if you're hunting bear, you can shoot a collared bear. There's no reason, but they ask you to bring the collar back.
Yeah.
But like, so it just seems to me that if you're collared for a scientific study, there should be, the law should say that you can't shoot that, because these collars are pretty obvious. They're big yellow. Anyway,
I was surprised
to know that you're allowed to shoot a bear that's been collared like that.
How about if it's wearing a top hat, though?
If it's wearing a top hat, then just get pictures of it and
twirl the cane.
Twirl the cane, right? Okay, moving on.
Anyway, I think that's a really interesting topic. And I think, by the time verification happens, I think that technology will be to the point that that could be done realistically, like insertion, you know, again, like the aliens do to us.
So how long until verification happens?
Boy. You know what? I think you've been in this range as well. I think it could go – it literally could go for, I would think, at least a few more decades. I honestly think that. I think it could happen tomorrow.
Or it could happen tomorrow.
Good.
I listened to the last – or not the last show, but the last show you guys did, the one that I was on this morning while I was on the treadmill. And I was listening to the ferocious – kill, no kill debate going on.
That was a good show.
Which,
wasn't
by the way, Scott, I mean, man, I got to give you props. I know we don't agree on it. And, you know, I have my beliefs and you have yours, but I've got to give you credit. I mean, you have held your ground under withering fire.
Your crazy little ground. It's all yours, though.
So, but you know, look, okay.
He's giving you compliments. So
I know.
If I could reach through the internet right now and bro fist you, I would. But I had a thought because there were a couple of times where you brought up, you know, finding a dead one versus harvesting one, and I thought, you know, what if we have reached a point to where it's already incredibly unlikely to find a dead one. Simply based upon the population numbers. You know, if there are thousands of bears, thousands and thousands of black bears in North America.
Yep.
But they are found in the forest, you know, deceased so infrequently that it has actually created a misconception that they're never found. You know, some of the Bigfoot luminaries have even thrown that out as evidence for why we don't find Sasquatch. Yes, Krantz. I mean, that was a smart man, and he's saying, you know, people don't find dead bears. Well, yeah, obviously they do. All you have to go, you know, you go on the internet and you can see plenty of pictures.
There's one right next to me in the kitchen here.
But it is infrequent enough that it creates that kind of myth. So imagine you have something that's much less populous. It's going to be even harder. Well, what if we've reached that point to where they're getting to be fewer and fewer, and so it's getting less and less likely that we would find a dead one to the point that we kind of go over the event horizon and there aren't enough to even have that chance. I mean, yeah, there's that lottery chance. There's that one in, you know, 56 million or whatever. But the practical possibility ceases to exist simply because there are so few out there, and it depressed the shit out of me when I thought about it.
Yeah. Well, then it brings up the correlate issue with that. If they're so low, and then if you kill one, you've just how much are you then impacting that already diminishing population?
That's the part of the conversation we're not going to get into.
Yeah, we're not going to have that. No.
And again, when we're at Brian's funeral. After being clubbed to death.
You're not
by
invited
Sasquatch.
To my funeral. What are you talking
Come
about?
Come on.
No.
I'll be there. I'll speak. I go, I know, you know, we disagreed on some stuff, but.
It's going to be like that Bob Gimlin thing you weren't allowed to go to. It'll be the same kind of deal. They'll have, your name will be on a list at the front door.
Gimlin's going to confess.
Don't let this guy in. Moving on.
It's a picture of me.
This guy. Don't let him in.
Don't let him in.
Matthew White says, do you guys think that if a fossil foot from Gigantopithecus or Paranthropus.
That's Coleman's favorite.
Paranthropus. Is that like the Pink Panther? Paranthropus? Whatever you believe is found and is similar to supposed Bigfoot cast, do you think it would add to the credibility of modern tracks? Oh, yeah. Hell yeah. But I don't think the chances of that happening are at all likely. As Meldrum pointed out at the conference that I was just at, you know, all we have is like teeth and a little jawbone because these things don't survive. It's incredibly rare. So his point is if it wasn't for porcupines dragging the teeth that they like to chew up into these limestone caves, we wouldn't even know that Gigantopithecus existed. So it's like, yeah, that would be fantastic. But I think the likelihood of finding that kind of
was
very slim.
If I remember from the book, which is a great book, by the way, it's called Other Origins. And it had to deal with the how they found the bones of Gigantopithecus right next to the bones of Homo erectus, right? In the cave, it was the first time two relatively close relatives of us were found. And it was like, so there, the speculation was, what was the relationship? If I remember correctly, in that book, and again, this is completely independent of Bigfoot research, as Russell Chinchon, I think. I mean, they were literally found feet apart, and it was definitely the same strata, so it was the same time frame. The speculation that he had and I guess others associated with the study, was that they felt it was reasonable, a reasonable assumption that Homo erectus could very well have hunted Gigantopithecus. That the teeth or the remains of the jaw found there was not a porcupine bring in, but because, you know, Homo erectus lived in caves and this was the remains of something they probably hunted. And then when you apply that, if in fact that theory or hypothesis is true, it might explain one reason why these beings are so reclusive in relation to us, because if this relationship existed for tens of thousands of years of things that are like us hunted things like them, what you would have, just like in other life forms on this planet, you would have a genetic memory where you would have this one being, even though it hasn't been taught that, it just innately fears. It knows. It's like the famous experiment they did with the they took a chick. It was a type of mouse that was a desert mouse, desert rat. And they took it immediately from its mother, and it was in a controlled environment. And they passed all these shadows, like geometric figures, over it. And it was at the front of this little hole, like a fake hole they had made to simulate a hole in the desert. And they passed, and it would never move. But as soon as they passed a form that looked like a hawk, it immediately went in the hole. It immediately. So it knew, just genetically, to fear that form. Shape. Yeah. So I always thought that was an interesting kind of theory that might explain why they would still be reclusive, if, again, assuming that in fact they do exist, which I think all three of us.
Yeah, I don't know. If a human being goes, and there are vanishingly few spaces like this left, but I don't think animals are born afraid of us. I don't know. I don't know. I don't know how much stock I put in that sort of genetic memory of threats and that sort of thing. I mean, obviously there's animals have instincts, and I don't know. I don't know. Yeah. I don't know what to think about that.
I think it depends, because we know so little about these things and we don't know. But again, it's based. That theory was based solely on that. Okay, well, look, these bones, this is a unique find. Homo erectus, and we know things about Homo erectus. We know they were group oriented. They had tools, they had spears. And what they've deduced, or I think reasonably speculated about Giganto, whether it was bipedal or quadrupedal, was that it was probably a largely a vegetarian animal. So if they were in the same time frame, Giganto and Homo erectus, this would have been a good protein source, you know, and again, if they hunted and hunted and hunted, then it would make sense, again, given that it's kind of accepted. I mean, that I think most accept that happens, that instincts happen. Like why, that some animals are more afraid of other animals, not just due to size because they see it, but because there is this history between them and it kind of locks into the code. Let's go to a clip.
I'm going to jump down to Todd Engel. Engel. Angel.
Wait,
Angel.
Wait.
What?
Wait, before you do that, I want to give a special shout out to Lorianne D'Alba Davali.
Yes.
Who liked our page. Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you.
I skipped her by accident because she said, I liked your page. That was her comment. I think that was very nice of her. Actually, I jumped down too far. Cheyenne Sky has a beautiful name.
Yes.
If it's real. I would love to hear more.
Guessing
you never
a new agey question.
Assuming it's not a dude. Yeah.
Assuming it's not some guy. It's a beautiful name. We should reach out. No, I would love to hear more than a 10-second blurb about Sam's experience. Yeah, Sam, let's get more.
He's done more than 10 seconds.
Finally, it's the Sam show. Wow.
It says here that your experiences were never mentioned in any detail, which is true.
Yeah.
Just that one sighting you've talked about. Other than that, you're very secretive.
Yeah, I don't like to.
And I think that can be a good thing.
Yeah.
He's a man of mystery.
Yeah. True. No, I've had several interesting experiences here. A lot of those kind of fall into that I don't know category. Could have gone one way, could have gone another. Can't really, confidently say that they were Sasquatch related, but they were pretty crazy. But for the sake of time, I will share one that falls into that category.
Are you lighting a pipe right now and sitting in a rocking chair?
Yeah. Imagine him with a red velvet jacket in a paneled room.
A loosely
and a rocking
tied,
chair and pipe.
Sitting a in loosely a tied robe. Yeah.
Very overstuffed leather chair.
No, when I first started to get into the subject actively, I'd moved back to Georgia, and I'd had a pretty interesting outing with some guys. who were with the Gulf Coast Bigfoot Research Organization, and I was really hungry for more. And so I went camping with a buddy of mine, and this was a guy I had known since elementary school. And so we go camping up north of Helen, and we weren't really going to do anything other than camping, but because of what had happened to me recently, you know, this subject was really fresh on my mind. And so we go up there and we set up camp on a Friday afternoon, and where we set up camp, there was a small stream coming down. And I know the stream, but I'm not going to name it. And so we put our campsite on one side of the stream, and we put our tents on the other side of the stream, which was up next to the side of the hill. And that first night, it was kind of windy. We stayed up to about 11:30. We finally turned in a little bit after midnight. The wind started to, you know, things kind of settled down, got still. And I was laying in my tent. I was just about to fall asleep. My tent was about maybe 10 feet, 10, 15 feet downstream from my buddy's tent. And I'm laying there and I'm almost asleep. And I hear someone walking towards me or walking towards my tent. And we had agreed when we first set up camp where the latrine area was going to be. And it was downstream from where my tent was. And so I immediately assumed, you know, that's my buddy. Yeah,
he's going to use the latrine.
Yeah, he's got to go handle his business or whatever. So I'm laying there and I'm listening to him, or what I assume is him, walking towards my tent. And in my mind, this is very clearly something that is walking, you know, bipedally, trying to be quiet, just like he would if he was trying to ease by my tent. And I realized just as this thing is getting almost to my tent, I did not hear the zipper on his tent open. And anybody that's ever been in a tent knows that that's a pretty distinctive, kind of loud, kind of distinctive. It's hard to have a fight in a tent because you can't, you know, slam the door behind you. You got to. Anyways, so that realization came into my mind of I didn't hear him come out of his tent. And at this moment, this thing is literally walking right past my tent. I mean, I hear the foot, you know, go down right beside the tent pole, and I'm laying there listening to this thing ease by my tent, and you know, my blood's just cold, hair standing up on the back of my neck, and it goes down a little ways, and it gets almost out of earshot, and then it turns up the hill, kind of angles back, almost, you know, almost like it's moving back in the same direction, but it's up the hill now above us. And it gets to this point, and it kind of just starts going back and forth. And I can hear this thing up there pacing around, and, you know, you hear sticks snapping and, you know, classic, like, serial killer moment in the movie right before the, you know, the hatchet comes through the tent wall or whatever. And but I listen to this thing, and it's just crazy. And finally, it just sort of shuffles off into the night, and I don't hear anything else. And so I finally settle down enough and I go to sleep, don't hear anything else, wake up the next morning. The sun hasn't even come up and I couldn't stay in the tent any longer. So I get out and I go start the fire and I'm sitting there for a while. And my buddy gets out of the tent and he comes over and he sits down beside me. And I had decided I was not going to mention this, you know, because in my mind, I'm thinking, you know, I've got Bigfoot on the brain. That's what he's going to say. I don't want him to think that I'm, you know, pulling his leg or telling a story or whatever. So I'm just going to sit here and I'm going to be quiet. And we sat there for, you know, 5-10 minutes or so, not really talking or anything. And then he finally just turned to me and he looked at me and he said, "I'm not trying to start any shit, but something walked past my tent last night and it was on two legs." And I thought, oh, thank you, Jesus. You know, confirmation. Thank you. So we started talking about it. And we decided that, you know, we would try to trace this thing back. Well, where our tents were, there was nothing. I mean, it's soft, you know, spongy ground. You know, you could have ridden a horse through there and it wouldn't have left much of a track, let alone, you know, something that was actually trying to ease by. But we knew the direction of travel. Well, where our tents were, it was kind of like a little bit of a shelf. Well, it wasn't much past my buddy's tent, and the shelf ran out, and you had to cross the creek. So we kind of, you know, just by deduction, kind of figured out where this thing had come from, and so we started to follow it back. And we found a maybe kind of possible track in some mud at one point. But what was really interesting was we got ways up the creek there and almost around the bend. You were basically to the point where had you been in this spot, you could have seen the lights in our camp, and that's it. You wouldn't have been able to see us or what we were doing, but you could have seen the lights. Was an area of grass that had been trampled down, like something had stood there for a while or, you know, laid there or whatever. And that's as far as we could track it back. But that's one of my experiences. Not saying it was Bigfoot. It was pretty crazy, you know, because in my mind, even if it was a person, that's pretty freaking creepy that somebody would just, you know, cruise right by.
Walk through your camp, yeah.
Yes, walk right through your campsite and then have, you know, not just, you know, pass through, but actually go up and kind of linger around a little bit watching your tents for whatever reason.
Yeah.
Can I just say, I would say just one thing. And again, we don't know what it is that went by your tent. We know you didn't see it. But it's been my experience, having done a lot of hiking, like literally thousands of miles of backpacking and hiking.
Show off.
Well, you know, I'm 81. I have to keep.
He is a professional walker.
So. I am. Is that I have noticed that deer or – well, now, if it was a bear, I think you would have known it was a bear. Bears are very clumsy. I mean, they are not stealth at all.
No, they're not. Yeah.
But things that I thought sounded – that is bipedal. That is yeah. – I'm hearing bum, bum, and I look out, and it's a deer.
Right.
And they can walk so methodically, so slowly, because they're trying to be quiet. They don't know what's around them. I'm just saying that as a possibility.
Oh, no. You're absolutely right. And you know, there have been times – I know on the previous show, Brian, you mentioned the armadillos.
I have
seen people almost turn white because there was an armadillo near campsite, and they could not imagine that it was anything other than – you know, a Sasquatch or an elk.
Like a rhino.
Those things are loud as hell. what was really, you know, kind of put this over the top for me was, you know, when this thing stepped by my camp, and I mean, it literally sounded like its foot was right beside the, you know, the edge of my tent. You could hear the weight. I mean, you could hear the foot kind of roll, you know, from heel to toe. You know, I've had experiences where deer have been out there and even animals that you wouldn't think would sound bipedal, like raccoons and possums and things, still come off sounding like it's somebody walking through the woods. But this was, you know, this was really distinct. And I know you said, you know, bears can be clumsy.
Yeah.
If it, you know, of the
I think if it was a bear, you would have known it was a bear, I think, because they did – bears just don't – they are stealthy. They don't need to be because they're apex predators.
And they sniff a lot too. They use they use their noses a lot. Yeah.
And I've been close enough to bears. They put off a funk. I mean, they have a smell to them that when you get, you know, within a certain distance, you can smell it. So I mean, you know, in my book, bear, maybe. Yeah. Person, yeah. I mean, if you're looking at it from Occam's razor, that's the most likely. Some guy just cruised through our campsite for whatever reason.
How far were you how far had you hiked in, and how far from a road were you?
We were actually not far off the road at all. We were car camping. So I mean, we were, you know, a stone's throw from the road. The next campsite from where we are, the next established campsite from where we were, was probably, I don't want to throw out a number. I mean, it's maybe 200-300 yards upstream from us, but there were no campers for, I would say, maybe a mile or more. And we didn't see them come in until the next morning, so I don't even know that they were there that night. I mean, I'm not trying to exaggerate the remoteness of this. I mean, it's very possible that there were people in the area. But
it still would be, I mean, if it was a person, that's still a pretty creepy thing going on. Eric Rudolph?
No. Yeah. And then another.
It was Eric Rudolph. I bet that's what it was.
Another.
Even though he's in jail now.
That happened was, I may have told you about this one because we actually drove past the spot where it happened when I was driving you out from Springer. I was camping with someone up in that area. And we'd stayed up, you know, that night, and we weren't really doing any squatching or anything. I mean, we were just camping again, and we turned in, and as I'm laying there, I'm listening, I can hear something coming towards the tent, and this something is very obviously a possum or a raccoon. I mean, you could hear it kind of, you know, the little scraping through the leaves and everything, and so in my mind, I'm thinking, you know, it's going to come around here to the edge of the tent. I'm going to kick it or whatever, and we'll be done with it. Well, it's almost to the tent, and all of a sudden, you hear this just thud, not far from where my head was laying in the tent, but not in the same, like, this thing's, this possum or whatever it is, it's coming towards my feet, and whatever this thud is, it's, you know, it's the other side of the tent, it's towards my head. Well, it startled me. I didn't know what it was. Well, whatever it was, it startled the possum, and it goes tearing off through the leaves. So I lay there for a second, and I thought, I'm not going to get out of the tent, you know. I don't hear anything, and I haven't heard anybody drive by or nobody walk by or whatever. I'm just, you know, I'm not going to bother with this. So the next morning I get up, and where the thud was, there's a nice little divot out of the ground, and right by the divot is this big rock. So what had happened, I mean, I'm assuming, is this big rock had been thrown into our campsite and had landed and, you know, dug out this divot in the dirt and startled off whatever this little possum was or whatever. And again, you know, this is people's the most likely culprit. But, you know, if we're just telling anecdotes and crazy stories.
Yeah, I can put your mind at ease with regard to that rock. I read on the Bigfoot forums this morning that, you know, rocks erode and they fall. So wow. That's probably what that was.
It was a tree rock.
Were there any rock trees around? Did you check?
Rock trees are really rare.
Were they in season though? It could have been rock tree season.
Now when the hickory nuts start falling.
That's different.
But in the positive, in the, you know, I definitely think this was something squatchy. We were camped.
Wow, we're getting three. This is like
Jesus.
This is wow. This is meat right here.
Well, I feel bad.
Repacking the pipe.
Yeah.
I'm looking at Cheyenne's Facebook page. By the way, you may be wasting all this effort because there's no pictures of her. I have no idea if she's even a woman. But go ahead.
Trust me. Tales of Sasquatchery are not how I live with women.
Yeah, chicks dig Sasquatch, man. They really do.
But you want to see my monkey? No. But anyways, my wife and I, we were camping.
There's a Homo erectus joke in there somewhere, but I'm not going to go there.
We had the 3 hours.
Grow up. Grow up, you people.
Yes.
Grow up.
Go, so, Sam. No, I'm sorry. Go, Sam. Go.
We were camping, and I almost mentioned this when we were talking about people overlapping one another, and you mentioned the Ohio Howl. Yeah. We were camping, and what we were doing was we would go out at night, and we would stay out really late at night, and we would get up in the morning, you know, middle around camp a little bit, go out during the day for a hike, come back, take a nap in the afternoon, and then, you know, repeat. So we were in that afternoon nap period, and we'd just gotten in the tent. We're trying to settle down, and there was a ridge across from us that was, oh gosh, maybe half mile, 3/4 mile from where we were. We were kind of in a gap where two hollers, sorry about that, sort of backed up one another. So it was sort of like, if you can imagine a V, and there's four ridges running away from one another.
Okay.
We were on the bottom of one side, and this, whatever this was, originated from the top of the same side. So we're laying down, we're trying to settle down, and we hear a very distinct howl come from that ridge across from us that was eerily reminiscent to the Ohio Howl. And I sat bolt upright, and my wife said, "Did you hear that?" And I said, "Yeah." And so I had my recording gear set up outside. I had a parabolic microphone on a tripod and all this, you know, cool looking gadgetry, and none of it, of course, is running because it's the afternoon. Right. So I'm trying to get out of the tent. Well, as I'm trying to get out of the tent, it howls again. So I come out of the tent and I'm running for my gear, and it howls one more time. And the third time it howled, it was a little louder. I don't know if it was more volume or if it was a little closer, because I'm running for my gear. And I get over there, and of course, once I get everything running, we don't hear anything. But when I say eerily similar, it was so similar to the Ohio Howl that the first thing I did when I got back home was I queued that up, and I listened to it several times to make sure that what I heard was not someone over there on the other ridge call blasting. I mean, it was that close.
Right.
Up until that point, I hadn't really put a lot of credence into that particular call. Mm-hmm. But after that, that really, really changed my perspective on it.
And I agree with you. The Ohio Howl is an interesting sound. And I don't know that – I mean, I don't know what it is. I did know what it was. But I've also heard the Ohio Howl in areas that – Well, you know, it was on this show when I was in California with the Strains, and we played the Ohio Howl, and we got it returned, but it wasn't exact. It was exactly the same, except one time it turned into something different at the end. And when you hear it repeated like that, and then this particular instance when we'd broadcast the Ohio Howl off this beautiful little shoulder of a ridge into this little valley, and we heard it come back almost immediately, and at the end it went like. Like it was just like, what in the world? I mean, it's something. Yeah. When you hear it come back like that, it's chilling.
Hello.
you almost face I've had this happen hunting numerous times where you've been out there for so long with nothing happening that when something does happen, you're almost in a lull. And initially you're not ready for it to happen.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Know, when things happen, it's not unlike baseball.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
in that nothing happens for a while and then all of a sudden all hell breaks loose and then it slows down again. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I can't tell you the times that I've been out deer hunting and in my mind I'm playing out, you know, okay, you know, this is a shooting lane, this is a shooting lane, this is a shooting lane. You know, this is where I'm willing to take a shot, and these are the areas I'm going to watch. And in my mind, I'm imagining what it's going to look like to see a deer come down, you know, one of these three lanes. And then sure enough, after I've been out there for 2 hours or however long, and, you know, and I'm about to fall asleep, here comes one strolling down one of those lanes, and it covers half the distance before I, you know, even process what's going on. It's like, holy crap, where did that come from? So, you know, you can imagine it's just amplified when it's something that's outside of, you know, so outside the norm that you, you know, you're not ready for it. It doesn't matter how much you, you know, mentally prepare yourself or try to get yourself in the game. You can't stay on that edge forever. You can't be ready all the time.
How many times do you think when you've been hunting, when you've been in a position specifically for the purpose of hunting, how many times do you think an animal has come along and you've not been able to take a shot because you weren't prepared or whatever, percentage-wise?
If you're talking about, like, modern firearms?
Yeah.
Probably, gosh, 50% of the time. Mm. If you're talking about using a bow, which is my preferred method now, honestly, it could be as high as 90% or more.
Yeah. You'd have to have it ready, like right there.
Yeah. I saw that this last season, I only took, I didn't get to hunt that much. I only took one deer, but I saw probably 40 or more over the course of the times that I went out to hunt. Huh. And the one that I took, it was early in the, you know, it was early in the season. It was only the second time that I'd gone out, and I got that one. And then I went several times after that and saw a deer. Had deer come, you know, in some instances pretty close to me, but because of situation, you know, you can't take a shot. You can't risk it. I lost a deer season before last, and that had never happened to me before. And you know, I try to be a good, conscionable hunter. I don't want the animals to suffer needlessly, right, and, you know, or anything like that. And that really ate me up. And so it changed my profile of how I hunt and my perspective going into this last season even more. So I was even more discerning about, you know, what kind of shot I was willing to take. So, I mean, yeah, realistically, it's a lot that you just – have to sit there and enjoy watching nature and know that, you know, you're not going to put anything in the freezer that day.
Right. Mm. It's just the one of the things that I think that some people have a misunderstanding of how hunting works and the just how it works and how often you're successful and how often you're unsuccessful. And
there's this unwritten rule in hunting, and any hunter will know this. If you go squirrel hunting, you see deer. If you go deer hunting, you see squirrels. You see turkeys the entire year except for the 3 weeks that the season is open. I mean, that's just how it works. It's uncanny. It's almost like they have a playbook.
So what you do is you shoot the squirrel and dress it up like a tiny turkey.
Right, right. Yes.
Stick some feathers in it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's really uncanny.
So I'm going to we're going to jump down where is it? Oh, Hank Squatch. Was it Hank Squatch? Somebody wanted to know about Josh Gates, and so I figured that'd be a nice segue into talking about the TBRC conference, the Texas Bigfoot conference. They wanted to know what Josh Gates was like. Josh Gates, who was sort of the headline at the Texas Bigfoot conference, Josh Gates gave a great presentation. It was as entertaining and as funny as you would expect it to be. He had a message in there. He told some great anecdotes about his time shooting the show. The thing that struck me most about Gates is that even when he wasn't doing that, he was incredibly gracious of his time. He talked to anyone who wanted to talk to him. He gave them as much time as they wanted. You never got the impression that he was like tired or annoyed that he was answering the same question for probably the millionth time. And after his presentation, I was up on stage and he was coming off stage, and there was a boy down there who couldn't have been more than 10. And he said, while Gates was packing up his stuff, he said, "You know, I just wanted to thank you. I just wanted to thank you and say how excited I am to meet you," or something along those lines. And Gates like said, "Oh, hold on a second." You know, so he like packs his stuff down there, and he went down there and he gave that kid exactly the kind of attention you would want him to give him if you were that guy's dad, right? I mean, he was just a tremendously good guy. So Gates was fantastic, and I can't say enough good things about him. He really was great. I mean, there was no like, "I'm a big TV star, I'm going to come in here and whatever." I mean, he was a really good guy. So he basically came off the way that he looks on the show and the way that you would hope him to be. He was awesome. He also, you know, I asked him about Ketchum. I don't think he necessarily was entirely keyed in on the fact that of all the things Ketchum's been doing, and the fact that he kind of launched her in this trajectory by bringing her some of the hair samples that he did. Because she was on one of his early shows. I didn't get the connection there. That I don't think that he really understood his whole Melba Ketchum connection, and I don't think he's been entirely up to on what she's been doing, which is probably because he has a life, and you know, it doesn't.
Well, he doesn't just do Bigfoot stuff too, right?
He's all over the place.
He's all over the place, right? Yeah.
So anyway, he was awesome. Somebody wanted to have a recap of the conference. Conference was great. It was probably the best attended conference we've had. Up till now, I think that the final tally was something like 450 people, which is tremendous. I think the best one we had previous to that was back in 2005, and maybe it was 400 people or thereabouts. So it was a great event. You know, all of the presentations were really really interesting and entertaining. I was going to talk about some of the things that were presented by the group during the conference, and I think I'm just going to instead, because we've been going on for a while here, to redirect people to the YouTube video that is the presentation I did that recapped Operation Persistence. There's a lot of stuff in there. There's some graphs and some charts of the data that we've collected in the field journals, sort of like how many times certain things happened and what kinds of things we experienced. There's also some audio recordings that are interesting to listen to, and there's a couple of video accounts of some of the encounters that happened during Persistence. So if you have an interest in X, and I've talked to them a little bit. I may actually pull the audio out of that and release that as a Bigfoot show at some point. We haven't finalized whether or not that's going to happen. But if you just can't wait and you can't get enough of X, and just based on the comments that we see on our page, there's a lot of interest about it, I think you should definitely check out that presentation, because I think you'll enjoy it. It is like an hour and a half long, but it's just jam-packed with data. and stuff.
Crazy. Yeah. Hey, I've got a quick question. I get, you know, Bobby Short's thing she sends out every year. Not every year, but every month about, you know, Bigfoot related stuff. And not that I think Bobby's particularly great or good or anything, but there was, she released this link about this footage in Utah that was taken on March 3rd. And she gave it some kind of, I just want to know if you guys had seen it.
Uh-uh.
It's, I don't know. I haven't looked at it. I should have actually looked at it before I brought it up. That would have been good.
That would have been.
That would have been.
Do you know how this works?
Yeah. Are you new here?
I don't really. I was kind of hoping you got. Oh, good God. It's 34 minutes long. Never mind.
Wow. What is it footage of?
It's supposedly, well, tracks in the snow in Utah.
Okay.
All right. That's kind of, I'm scanning it.
Bigfoot encounters / films / yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So I'm scanning right now.
Snow tracks and various lengths of hair wads found on mountain in Utah, March 3rd, 2013. Toward the end of the film shows an area where Sasquatch laid down in the snow to rest.
Yeah. I thought it said, she said there was actually footage of an alleged.
It looks like it's just the napping. It's probably where the Wookiee slept.
The guy. Yeah.
Wookie Squatch.
Yeah. Wait a minute. Did you hear that? Okay. Anyway, no, sorry.
I don't hear anything.
Sorry about that. Oh, how long have we been on now? Was it 4 or 5 hours?
I think we're on the 6th hour. No, this is a typical length show.
If you're not willing to go marathon length, man, you just need to.
No, I'm at a friend's house.
Is there anything else that we didn't cover that we should cover?
We're waiting on the Mund stuff because it's better to have him on
before
I destroy his theory. I think he's always had interesting stuff to say, but I think there's still presumption going on there. Opinion that can't be quantified, therefore scientifically maybe not proving anything. That's all I'm saying.
Have you seen the thing that I posted for you?
I've seen bits of it.
Watch
what I was kind of struck by.
It's like 45 minutes long. Sit down and watch.
Yeah, I did. I saw bits of it, but I was kind of like disappointed that he was talking in such definitive terms. Well, here, Patty, and it was like, I know he was addressing a group of largely believers, but I thought I was hoping, unlike his writing, which I find for the most part is actually very objectively presented.
Well, he doesn't mess around. I mean, he absolutely says it's a real animal because of the things that he's looked at and the analysis he's done. And if you watch the video, I don't know. I think you should watch it.
I've seen. I'm guessing, unless there's something new, I've seen stuff he's presented before.
He said that the stuff that he showed at the Texas Bigfoot conference had not been seen anywhere before.
Okay, then I'll watch. Then I will watch the whole thing.
Yeah,
and I'll tear it apart.
Good luck.
That's objective, isn't it?
Yeah.
But my question is, I did ask you one. You said that he's going to be peer reviewed, but is he going to be peer reviewed by somebody who's not associated with the Bigfoot field? In other words,
I have no idea. You have to ask Meldrum then.
Yeah, yeah. Because that and I don't know. I mean, again, it goes into measurements. And if you can't conclusively rule out, and if you don't even know what the measurements are, which he kind of admits, and
I think this is a question you should save for
you're,
on
you're
the
right.
Show.
He's a little over the edge.
Uh huh.
Okay. He is. It's not. It's it can't be. Okay, I'll leave it at that. I've got him right here. Bill, can you come in?
So, is there anything else, Sam? Is there anything we should have talked about? There were more questions.
There's probably some things that we should not have talked about.
Well, yeah, there's always that.
I'll catch him back a few times.
No, it's still the same old crazy kooky world of Bigfoot that it's always been.
So we may not have you on the next show.
We may not. I'm hoping that I will, especially if whether it's Munz or not, 50th episode, I would really like to be a part of that, even though I am the, baby of the group.
None of us has been on all 50 of them.
Yeah.
True.
I've only been on, because there was one I wasn't a part of.
I'm trying to forget that one still.
I think there were only 4 downloads.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, if you want to know who the most important person on the Bigfoot show is, listen to that show.
No, that's not fair at all. That's not fair.
No. Yeah, I may not be I may not be with you guys, so we'll just have to wait and see.
I'm gonna pull the old family card.
Yeah, we are
a baby or some bullshit like that.
We are at DEF CON too. We've got the go bags packed and
wow, so you're close.
Oh yeah. Today's the 7th, so less than 2 weeks.
People
yeah.
who don't know, Mrs. Sam is expecting.
Yes, it and will be our second.
Critically soon, as a matter of fact.
Yes, critically.
Is the big sister? You didn't find out what the gender was or any of that. You're doing it old school.
Yeah, we didn't find out with the first, and we're not going to find out.
Are you going to have her give birth in the back of a buckboard, or like? I mean, you're going to do it like?
Yeah,
country style.
I will step away from my jug and washboard play and just. and then I'll go to drink the corn liquor right out of the mason jar. No. We did it with the first one, and it was awesome. I highly recommend it. I mean, if you want to know what surprise is, don't find out what kind of kid you're going to have until the actual moment. It's like Christmas and your birthday times 10, all rolled up into one. Totally pisses the family off, too.
Oh, so yeah, totally. Like I can imagine.
Yeah. Are you going to do any Neanderthal testing on the child?
You know, I'm hairy enough that I can pretty much guarantee there's at least a 2.5, 2.6% in there.
Nice.
Yeah. But nope, just hoping for, nice, easy, no frills delivery with happy, healthy baby. And we got a boy name picked out and a girl name picked out. And whichever one wins the lottery gets it.
Can you tell us, or is that bad luck?
I bet you haven't told anybody the names, have you?
No, oh yeah, no, no, no.
Yeah, 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 yeah. If you haven't figured out the gender, you're not sharing the names either. I know how you people work.
What's really great is when we had our first child, our daughter, we had a boy name picked out. And so after she's born, my mom comes to me and she says, "So, now that she's born, why don't you tell me what the boy name was?" And I was like, "Uh-uh." You're not getting that. We may use that for the next one. You never
back
know.
In the hopper.
Yeah, so back into the lottery.
So are you reusing that one?
No.
What was it?
I'm not telling you.
Oh, come on. See, now this is just total bullshit.
Yeah.
All right, well.
Oh, man, I mean, I got to keep it real,
All right. So literally this could happen anytime.
Good luck. It could happen now. I mean, while we're wrapping up the show.
It could have happened already.
Yes. Well, she's
you think
actually,
she would have said something to you?
I think she would have come in here and, like, grabbed me by the ear hole and drug me out of the room. The best though was we've been hatching chicks recently for the farm. And nice. And I've been messing with her mind by saying they're omens. The first one that we hatched, it pipped, and usually within about 12 hours of pipping, the chick will hatch completely out of the egg. Well, this ended up being like 36 hours from the time it pipped until the time it actually fully
pipping
emerged.
Is when it like pokes its little nose out.
Yeah,
of
the when, it, when it Ooh. First puts a little crack into the shell. And so I told her, I was like, this is an omen. It's going to be a long delivery, and that nearly got me slapped. And then
good to see that scientific scrutiny.
Yeah, and then the next one. Next one came nearly 24 hours early, so I said, maybe it's going to be an early one. And that nearly got me slapped again. So, yeah, it's fun times, but yeah, we're excited. And
well, good luck with that, man. That's awesome stuff right there.
Yeah, it's a strange, crazy ride because you go for about 7.5 months, nearly 8 months, thinking, it's way off in the future. And then there's like this panicked rush at the end of, oh my God, it's right around the corner. Yeah. We're about to have a kid.
Uh-huh.
So yeah, that's cool.
You got everything ready? You got the room ready?
Yeah. We got the baby's room set up. And,
you're just not going to like use one of those incubators, right? You're going to use a...
Yeah, no. All right. I will not be building a crib out of
because you do that. You build a lot of that stuff yourself. I just wanted to make
sure.
Oh,
yeah. You got to be DIY.
Got any Sasquatch jammies?
No, I have a banjo onesie that I picked out. it says this is how I roll. No
picture of the kid from Deliverance on it. That'd be nice. Yeah.
It's funny. We really with our daughter, we really sheltered her from a lot of that. I had one really good friend of mine that bought her a stuffed Sasquatch while they were out on the West Coast, and it's kind of cute and kind of creepy at the same time. And that was it. But she ended up, she has a collection of stuffed monkeys that is Smithsonian worthy. And it wasn't intentional. I mean, it had nothing to do with Bigfoot. I mean, we were, you know, kind of sort of semi-deliberately not dragging her into that. But people, you know, just kept giving her monkeys for one reason or another. And so now she's got this huge collection of them. And it's pretty awesome. So,
that's cool.
Yep.
All right. Well, I'm going to put a fork in it unless somebody says something. That's very professional.
Grow up. That's the name of the show. Grow up.
And grow the hell up.
When I grow